This episode of the Airplane Geeks podcast is brought to you by ComAvia, delivering leading-edge media to the aviation industry. ComAvia, the company the aviation industry turns to for the best in new media marketing communications. Visit them at commmavia.com.
Welcome to the Airplane Geeks. It is another great recording session tonight. I'm Rob Mark with the JetWine.com blog, and I am here tonight joined by a couple of great co-hosts. First of all, let's see, who shall I pick on first? I'm going to pick on Max Truscott out in Silicon Valley. Welcome, Max.
Hey, Rob, nice to talk to you. I think it's been about 6 weeks since I've been on the show. I had a really, really busy time teaching somebody their private in 41 days. we met twice a day, Monday through Friday, and that's why you haven't heard me on a number of shows. I was pretty tied up.
What kind of an airplane?
You know, it was a straight 172, not my favorite Cirrus. So I guess I did do a seminar for Cirrus this weekend, which was great fun. We had about 40 Cirrus pilots show up and talk about critical decision-making.
Wow, so you've been a busy guy. Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. And, of course, being a flight instructor myself, we have Brian, who's not a flight instructor. But, hey, he's such a good guy, and he's such a good producer. We don't care. Brian, how are you, and where are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Rob. I'm in D.C., still recovering from the Innovations in Flight event. So we recorded episode 355 there. That's all wrapped up, except I have no idea what Max is doing with the editing. So anything I might say about the show could be duplicate or not, but it was really fun to be there.
Well, and of course, for those of you that may not remember the name change, it used to be the Becoming a Pilot Day that the air and space folks used to throw. And now it is this big, long name that Brian just told us about, Innovations in Flight.
Innovations in Flight. Yeah, and it was really interesting because it was the first time I ever met Max Flight in person and David Vanderhoof. They were both there. And kind of co-hosting for the show was our main man, Micah. So although I've talked with Micah many times on the phone and through Skype and all, it was the first time I met him in person as well. So lots of fun there.
Well, it sounds like it was a good time. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get out there this year. It's the first one I've missed in 4 years. But hey, you know what? Time marches on. So that's all we could do. But tonight we have a great show with Mark Matsuka, who's the founder of ProPilotWorld.com. And we're going to have an interesting conversation because now Brian is completely outnumbered because we have three pilots on the show. So, Brian, I hope it's not going to make you feel inadequate of in any way, shape, or form.
No, it's okay. I really enjoy having you guys fly me around.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So I think this should be a good time. We'll talk about that. I'm not sure if we're going to have an Australia desk in our section. We're kind of doing an extra show this week because of the event in D.C., so this may come out, I think, towards the end of this week, and it will be in addition to the show 355 that was created at or created on the floor of the beautiful Air and Space Museum at the Udvar-Hazy Center in beautiful, what is that? That's Virginia, isn't it?
Chantilly.
Chantilly.
Yeah, pretty much right next to Dulles Airport.
Right. Was there any lace there? You know, Chantilly. Okay. All right. We won't go down there. But, of course, what we won't have on this show, we won't have any listener mail. So we're going to have a chance to really dig into the topic tonight, which is the online world a little more at ProPilot World. So, but I think what we should do is probably start off with a few interesting news stories. We had a few this week, and maybe we can dig into them. And I just realized I don't have the sound effect for the radial engine starting up when we do the news. So this is where Max will have to just add it when I say, are you guys ready?
Ready.
Ready from the West.
So our first news story this week comes from the Chicago Tribune, because out here in Chicago, we had a pretty close call last week where two aircraft tried to take off on crossing runways at the same time, and it was potentially pretty ugly. Luckily, the controller in the tower at Midway caught it, and he really did save the day. And we had one aircraft, a 737, taking off on 31 Center, and a 717 trying to depart on 4 Right. And they had similar call signs, and one took the takeoff clearance for the other mistakenly, and it was almost a disaster. But, of course, I don't know. What did you guys think about this one?
Yeah, it certainly didn't look pretty at all. It's really interesting that the whole issue centered around similar-sounding call signs, which is a not infrequent problem in flying around when two aircraft have similar sounding call signs. The controller definitely did his job. The ground controller ahead of time told both aircraft, beware similar sounding call signs on the frequency. But unfortunately, that wasn't enough. Apparently, when they were both queued up to take off on separate intersecting runways, both of them accepted the takeoff clearance when it was intended only for one of them. And that that could have ended in disaster if the controller hadn't noticed the other aircraft taking off.
And of course, it was at night, too.
I didn't know that.
And I believe it was. I have to go back and check the exact time. But, of course, that's actually an interesting point. It may not have been because, of course, I keep forgetting that the time has changed out here for the summer. And maybe it was light. I couldn't tell. But, of course, if it had been night, that would have made it even more difficult for someone to try to keep an eye on. But Mark, we didn't introduce you too much as a professional pilot. Of course, you're a business aviation pilot, and you grew up out here, or you certainly started your career out here in Chicago. And I think you flew in and out of Midway quite a bit, didn't you?
I did, Rob. I was based out of Pewaukee when I lived in Chicago, or Chicago Executive Airport, as they call it now. But we did do many positioning flights in and out of Midway, picking up passengers, dropping off passengers. And as you know, Midway can be a challenging environment. And, with the similar sounding call signs, you hear it fairly often on the radio, people accidentally grabbing somebody else's call sign, especially with the airlines that are basically using numbered flights. A lot of the flight numbers are very similar sounding. And it isn't surprising that this something like this happened, unfortunately. But the fortunate aspect of it is they had a very sharp controller on duty, and he caught it. So it does happen. You hear it on the radio. Usually it's benign when it happens. Somebody grabs the wrong frequency, and they leave the frequency, and then they realize they went somewhere they shouldn't, and then they come back. But this definitely could have been very catastrophic.
Well, and I think something else that makes this even more interesting, of course, was the fact that the phrases we often hear about that go on in the cockpit, one of the prime ones being, what's it doing now? Another one that pops up often is, was that for us?
Exactly.
And we'll put the actual recording in the show notes, because it's really instructive, I think, for people to hear it, because you'll hear the squealing of all the microphones as everybody tried to talk over the top of everybody else. And it was very, very difficult for anybody to be certain who was actually being addressed. And so, again, it was pretty close. And another few seconds and those airplanes would have been traveling a whole lot faster, and it would have been ugly.
And You bring up a really good point, Rob, about the multiple transmissions that were happening simultaneously. It's kind of an unfortunate legacy that in aviation, the type of modulation used on our VHF radios is AM. Most people think it's FM or something else, but it's not AM. And one of the characteristics of AM modulation is if you have two signals on at the same time, you don't hear anything except a squeal. And that squeal is the slight difference between the two carrier frequencies between the two transmitting stations. You know, if they were to change to FM, the stronger signal would capture and people would at least hear the louder signal, which would presumably be air traffic control. So this could have been a lot worse if they hadn't been able to finally get people to be quiet and start listening to the controller. And of course, what the controller was saying continuously at that point was stop, 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 stop. And everybody stopped. And that really saved the day.
Hey, one of the other things, since there are three instructors on here, maybe you could instruct me. If the captain was not the pilot in, I don't want to say pilot in command, but the pilot flying, you know, if it was the co-pilot's turn to fly in the Delta aircraft and this incident happened, and then the control tower said, get ready to write down this number, do both pilots end up getting in trouble, or is it only the co-pilot getting in trouble for this?
My guess is that both pilots in that Delta airplane probably had a little counseling session with the chief pilot. But I don't know. Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It would definitely be a crew action. So I think that if there were to be any FAA violations, per se, pilot deviation, likely it will fall upon both of the crew. The captain, ultimately, whether he's flying or not, is the final authority. And the one in charge. So the FAA certainly would have a discussion with him, but the co-pilot would absolutely be in there as they are a complete crew.
And as it should be, right? I mean, we don't want anybody in the cockpit going, hey, it wasn't my turn to fly. You know, they both have to be fully engaged at all times.
And this could have been such a disaster if these two airplanes had met at the intersection. And luckily they didn't. But, of course, another story we had going this week was that there's been talk, as everybody that is based in the U.S. knows, there's been talk about reforming the air traffic control system seven ways from Sunday in the last few years, from taking the budgeting aspects of it away from the Congress and running the air traffic control side in some sort of private corporate kind of system. And this week, Bill Schuster is a representative from Pennsylvania. I believe he's a Republican. I should know that, but I think he is. And if he's not, well, my apologies. It's my fault.
He
Max,
is, by the way.
Max would have had that organized. Okay. And, you know, he talked about this at the Aero Club last week and how it's high time that we fixed what a lot of people think is a broken system, not safety-wise, but in terms of how it is operated, you know, how the funding mechanism works and how that has affected the rolling out of next gen and all that kind of thing. And there are parts of this that say, you know, maybe that's not a bad idea. But then most of the associations are saying, yeah, but wait a minute. Who's going to control what? And where is the money coming from, which would have to come from user fees and not fuel taxes? And so I don't know where the majority fell this week, but I think people are very worried about this. But again, you guys tell me what you think.
Yeah, we should be worried about it. If you look at the history on this, there are foundations here in the country that have been pushing this kind of thing for probably close to 20 years because you know, they have a variety of reasons that they think it would work well. And they point to other countries around the world that have privatized their ATC systems. And invariably what you find is that any country that privatizes shortly thereafter, a GA traffic declines significantly. And I think that's because of the user fees which are imposed, and it becomes a bit of a spiral. You know, fewer people are flying, so they have to raise raise the fees even higher, which leads to further reduction in GA flying. So I think if this occurs in the U.S., I think there's a high probability we're going to see a significant decline in general aviation. And I think as pilots, we'll probably be writing our congressman very soon about this.
Instead of raising the price for GA, why not just raise the price for commercial? Because our tickets might go up a few dollars, but they certainly have the ability to absorb it a lot more than the GA space. And they'd still get their pennies.
GA is paying a lot right now through our aviation fuel taxes. So everything for FAA ATC is fully funded. Most people feel that if this were to go to a private corporation, that the members of the board of that corporation would be representing mostly the airlines, and there'd be no representatives for people doing personal flying and general aviation flying, and that the fees would be tilted heavily to penalize the smaller players. So there are a lot of ways this could go wrong on us.
The goal, as I understand this version of it, is that like we see at NAV Canada, is that there would be a segment fee. If you're on if you file a flight plan, an IFR flight plan, it costs X amount of dollars. And it wouldn't cost more for a Boeing 747 than it would for, that 172 you were flying this week, Max. And that's what I think really has people worried, because if the airlines are going to pay exactly the same to carry 300 people as you might pay to carry two, people say, well, where's the fairness in that? But again, that's where the arguments are going to start, I think.
Well, I really worry that if some structure like that is set up, a lot of GA pilots will stop filing IFR. They might end up scud running, and we're going to have an increase in the accident rate. So I think the whole program is unlikely to benefit to GA in any way.
No, that's true. And of course, we already have some pilot issues that we're dealing with now because of a lack of interest on the part of many people due to the costs and everything else. So what we don't need is one more nail in the GA coffin. So but we'll see where that ends up. Let's just jump to that last story. I know I had something in there about the 7X or the 8X, but since Mark is we're going to find out soon, a Gulfstream pilot anyway, he probably doesn't care that much about the 8X. But maybe you do, Mark. I don't know. But listen, we're just going to talk real briefly. Of course, this week was the Paris Air Show. And, of course, if you haven't been to the Paris Air Show, it's quite a quite an event. It is unlike anything you have probably experienced. It is not in any way, shape, or form even remotely close to what you experience, say, at AirVenture in Oshkosh. It's a much more business-focused show, lots of suits, lots of security, and this year, $107 billion in orders came down the pike for Airbus and Boeing. I mean, let's see if I can get my exact aircraft numbers here. 421 Airbus orders and 331 Boeings, mostly single-aisle aircraft. That's a lot of airplanes.
And not one single one for the A380, which I was really not surprised by. The other thing, Bombardier did the first launch of the C-Series, and sadly, they received zero orders at the show as well.
Yeah, that was really ugly for them. I kind of just didn't mention them because then I didn't have to mention that they didn't get any orders. And but it's going to be a problem for Bombardier because this is the show where everyone is expected to kind of show their stuff and point to the airplane they want on their fleet. And Bombardier, I'm sure those folks were pretty unhappy when they went back to Montreal.
Yeah, I think some other interesting news that came out of the show, one was the vertical takeoff of Boeing, as everyone likes to refer to it. So no, the 787 didn't actually take off vertically. It did a bit of a vertical climb after takeoff, but it certainly wasn't a vertical takeoff. The other real kind of fun fact that I found from the show is it wasn't about just business jets, commercial and military aircraft. You had someone like CFM booking orders as well, and they booked over $14 billion worth of engines, 835 of the new CFM56 and LEAP engines. And they doubled their sales in orders in those 3 days over what they sold for all of last year.
That's an excellent point. I did leave out those valuable engine manufacturers. And without the motors, the airplanes don't go anywhere, do they?
This is the point where the show will be edited and Max Slight will talk about how important engines are.
Yes, that's true. And, Mark, our other host is a retired Pratt & Whitney guy. So
okay.
He usually had something interesting to say about the engines, but I kind of left that out too, but I didn't want to get too long on all these. But and anything else that you guys might want to say about Paris, other than the fact that it's beautiful in April?
Well, we'll always have Paris. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention was that you mentioned $107 billion in orders, and technically that's the total of orders plus purchase commitments, which are very different than orders. So I think the orders were on the order of, $20 billion, I think, for Boeing, and $16 billion for Airbus. And all the rest on top of that are commitments. And, of course, a commitment doesn't constitute an order. And, of course, orders don't also equal shipments, because people can come in and cancel orders, push them out, things like that.
Well, and of course, we won't say anything about the fact that most of the people doing the ordering were men, and we know what they're like with commitments. We won't go down that road. Okay. Before we get started with the news, I want us all to hear from Micah, our main man, who is going to ask, not beg, but ask for your support of the Airplane Geeks podcast. So let's take it away, Micah.
As you know, the Airplane Geeks podcast is a labor of love that has always been free to anyone that wants to listen, and the geeks plan to keep it that way. Over the years, though, there have been significant costs associated with producing it. Some of these things are rather invisible, or in airplane geek parlance, stealthy. Some technical expenses are not even very easy to explain, things like media and website hosting services. Then there's the physical equipment, like recording gear. And with the geeks bringing us stories from outside the studio, there's field reporting expenses as well. These costs have always been borne by the hosts, and more recently, with the help of a few small sponsors. So we're asking if you'll help by going to airplanegeeks.com and clicking on the donate button. Now understand, we're only asking you to do this if you can. If you're saving your money for flight lessons, for higher education, or if you just can't afford to make a contribution, that's fine. We want you to continue to listen and be a part of the Airplane Geek community, a group of people that I'm very proud to be a part of. But if you can, would you please take this opportunity to help keep this great show on the air and free of advertising? The Airplane Geeks love their listeners, and if you're like me, this great show is more than just a podcast. It's a group of friends from all over the world that you've just never met. Keep listening to the show, and keep telling your fellow aviation geek friends about it. And if you can, and only if you can, please support this amazing podcast by going to airplanegeeks.com and clicking on the donate button now. Thanks in advance for your support. For the Airplane Geeks in Portland, this is your main man, Micah.
Well, let's do this. Let's move on to our main topic, and we barely had a chance to say hello to Mark Matsuka from Pro Pilot World, and I just want to take a moment and just give you guys a bit of a background check on who Mark is. And as the founder and president of Pro Pilot World, I love this marketing statement that ProPilotWorld.com is the premier information exchange and networking resource for professional pilots with more than 14,500 members. Nice numbers. Now, of course, Mark, as you mentioned earlier, you started flying out here in Chicago at my hometown airport, beautiful down. It'll always be Palwaukee to us, I think, won't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely, it will be.
It'll never be Chicago exec. But he's been flying for 27 years, 22 of which have been in business airplanes, and he's got more than 13,000 flight hours, 10,000 in jets, and at beautiful downtown Palwaukee. He was a flight instructor, a charter pilot, a corporate pilot, and flying for one of the corporations where he eventually became chief pilot, and now he lives in beautiful downtown Southern California, where he's the chief pilot and aviation manager for a company operating a Gulfstream G450. Did I get that correct, Mark?
That sounds pretty accurate, Rob. Thank
wow,
you.
Darn, not bad for an old guy, huh?
Now, for us California people, where is this town, Southern California, located? Because I don't remember that town.
That would be basically North San Diego County is where I'm at. But, yep, we're enjoying the weather out here in San Diego.
Well, I think that we're really glad to have you, and welcome to the Airplane Geeks podcast, Mark.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here, and I appreciate you guys taking some time to learn about ProPilotWorld.com and to let your listeners find out about us as well.
Well, you say now that you're happy to be here. Let's see how it goes in the next half hour. You may change your mind completely. So, but seriously, we're really excited to talk about this. And
well, ProPilotWorld.com came from being a member of other aviation forums, for the past 15, 20 years. And all the forums that I was a member of just all seemed to be lacking a bit of accountability and professionalism. Basically it came down to anybody could join. So you never knew who the person was on the other side of the conversation, whether it was somebody portraying that they were somebody they weren't. You know, was the 747 captain that was doling out advice really a 18-year-old, kid on the other side of the computer? So people didn't really know, and then the reliability of the information that was being exchanged then came into question itself, because you didn't know who maybe you were asking a question about something, who was really giving you the advice. And there was no way to back it up or to confirm that those people that were actually participating were pilots and had the knowledge to be exchanging. So after looking at this issue for a long time, it came up with the idea of, what if we had people actually register with their real names and then verified them that they actually had the certificates they did by verifying their name against the FAA database. And then at least when you came to the site, you would know that the other people that are on there have been vetted, and you can actually put some reliance on perhaps the information that they're giving. At least you know that they have the background to be there.
Yeah, Mark, but now I can't contribute. It's so sad.
That's true. And as a matter of fact, our membership requirement, we do have a few non-pilot members. We call them associate members, and they're vouched for by another member. And they're typically industry professionals that help out or have something to offer to the membership. Examples, some of the guys from Virtual Flight Surgeons out in Colorado came and did some online chats with us and answered questions and so forth. And a couple of those guys were pilots and a couple weren't. So we do have there's small exceptions that we do make for industry professionals. But overall, our normal membership requirement is to have at least a commercial pilot certificate. And that keeps us to a certain level of people that we want to have on the site, so that we're not just getting in to enthusiasts that are coming on, but people that can actually work in the industry and can contribute some valuable information on the day-to-day happenings within the industry.
Well, let's see. You started this site, I think, almost 10 years ago now. Is that correct?
Yeah, in May, we just went past our 9-year anniversary. So we opened in May of 2006 with basically zero members, and it's been word of mouth. That's how we've grown. So we invited in about 100 of our closest friends, and we gave them some memberships to hand out to kind of seed the community. And within several weeks, we had already started to grow, and word had gotten out, and it's continued to grow ever since. We have new members joining every day.
I mean, that's actually pretty interesting. I think something that I think really jumps out is that not only are you vetting your members, but this is a membership site. People are paying $14.95 for a year's worth of access. Now, did it ever, you know, there are a lot of sites that have tried this or maybe have thought about trying it, but what made you come up with that number and actually and work on a membership basis anyway?
Well, the thought was is many of the other sites are covered in ads. So they're supported by ads, and they're hoping that the number of ads displayed in the click-throughs will bring in enough revenue to support the site. At the end of the day, my thought is on those kind of sites, they're more worried about keeping the advertisers happy than keeping the membership happy. The membership are kind of the necessity to be there, but the advertisers are the ones supporting the site. So what happens is the site starts to then bow to the requirements or the desires of the advertisers and doesn't really worry themselves too much with the needs of the membership. Our thought was to go with a paid membership, keep it reasonable, and then we could focus 100% on the needs and the desires of the membership and not have to worry about any advertisers. Added benefit is when you're on our site, you don't have to see flashing ads of, you know, all sorts of various things that maybe have no interest to you at all. It also gives everybody a little bit of a bit of skin in the game in that they're paying to be there, so they're more likely to try and be a positive influence on the community and try and give something back as well as, you know, come and get the knowledge they're looking for. And it keeps everybody a little bit more on an even playing field and more likely to be friendly and helpful and professional. And we've really seen that to prove true over the 9 years. With the group of members that we have, I've seen members help each other that have never even met in person. Between job leads and career advice, general information on operation or running a flight department or an aircraft or procedures, it's been great. I've seen so many people that the first time they meet might be years after they've met virtually, and to see that happen and to see people come together and really be interested in helping each other it's been fantastic to watch.
Wow. Guys, what do you think? Would something like this work in a GA kind of environment, do you think, where they're, pilots weren't necessarily professional pilots, or?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I would imagine that, Mark, a lot of your pilots probably are GA pilots, aren't they?
They are. We've got a very large group of corporate or business aviation pilots. We also have a very large group of commercial airline pilots, and then we also have some that just happen to have their, you know, commercial pilot certificate or CFI, and they maybe are working other jobs and they fly on the side for fun, and they still enjoy to interface with everybody and to exchange information and to communicate. So we do have GA. We don't have the guy that's a private pilot that is not interested in going any further or getting his instrument or commercial. So that segment is not here. But our main focus is on basically the people that are more or less flying for a living. And we have a pretty good group of retired pilots as well that still enjoy keeping in touch and to chat about aviation on a regular basis.
Yeah, Rob, I really like the idea of having a vetted community. There are an awful lot of topics that I think I would be interested in hearing from other people that are, well, maybe not experts, but just have an awful lot of knowledge in that field. And something like less than $15 a month certainly seems reasonable to get assurances that you're getting a better answer than, well, someone like me answering the question.
Just to clarify, our membership is actually $15 per year, not per month.
Oh, did I say month? Sorry about that.
But Rob, wouldn't you miss the trolls? I mean, wouldn't that be part of the fun?
Well, I don't know. I guess I never thought of that, Max. I mean, those people that hide out, that just throw those curveballs in there just to see what... I know there's another... Mark, I don't know if you or if any of you guys ever spent any time up on the pea prune system that's, I think it's based over in Europe, but they used to get some very interesting conversations going on there. Much of it very good, but then every so often they would take a left turn somewhere. That brings up an interesting point. I mean, are you moderating these Let me back up a second. How many different forums sort of are there on ProPilotWorld.com, Mark?
We've got over 100 forums, including the sub forums. It's a wide range. We even have some non-aviation forums, which initially we had very few, but as our membership grew and people spend more and more time on our site, they like to, since everybody has kind of a similar background, they like to exchange information about other things too. So we have a pretty wide range of non-aviation topics as well in a separate section that people discuss. But as far as the aviation topics, we have well over 100 forums, everything from career advice, job searching, job listings, airline discussions, corporate aviation discussions. Aviation safety is one of our big ones, down to medical issues regarding people getting their medicals and different topics that come up there. So we really have a very, very wide range of forums available to our membership on a everyday basis.
Well, and then I guess going back to my earlier question, are the forums moderated or do you find that that's not really a big deal?
They are to an extent. We have we don't call our moderators moderators. We call them forum leaders. And in addition to myself, we have six other forum leaders, and they do act as moderators. I mean, in the program themselves, they are technically moderators. But we don't, with the vetting of the membership and the level of membership that we have, we don't find ourselves having to get involved very often at all. For the most part, the community is very self-correcting. If a thread starts to go off the rails, for the most part, it'll steer itself back on. We'll keep an eye on it. Our members also have the ability to report posts. So if there's a post that somebody just gets really sideways, they can click a button and they can report a post. And when that happens, then email goes to all the moderators. It creates a thread in the moderator section, and they deal with it. Or the forum leaders deal with it, I should say. But for the most part, it's a relatively hands-off community as far as moderation. But we're always there to help. Most of the moderation duties, to be honest with you, are somebody that after they post something, and they have a small window where they can go back and edit their post. But after that, the posts get locked down so that people aren't saying one thing and then a week later coming back changing what they said and say, well, I never said that, to keep that level of accountability very high. But sometimes people will find an error in their post, or they said something that was incorrect and they realize it. And they'll report their own post to have a forum leader come and assist them. So a lot of the duty of the moderators or the forum leaders actually does become more housekeeping. On occasion, just like on any big community, we'll have a thread get pretty exciting. And sometimes they'll need to step in and make sure just to remind everybody to play nice and to keep it civil. But for the most part, and I've been on all the other forums many years. I've been in computers and aviation for 25 years. So I've seen the antics go on at other places, and I can tell you we have very little of that, which makes us all really happy. And I think that's what keeps a lot of our members coming back year over year.
Oh, trust us. We know about that with Rob. We have to keep him in line every once in a while, too.
Yeah, I was wondering if we could use the job posting section of ProPilot World and find another host for any of us.
So maybe we better just skip over that part. Do you have any thoughts about maybe some interesting aspects of ProPilot World, something that, I don't know, what kind of, we've talked about the membership, we've talked about the vetting, anything else about it that makes it kind of unique, perhaps, from competitors?
I would say one of the most unique things outside of the vetting of the members, and one more word on the vetting, we talk about we check their name in the FAA database and so forth. And part of the reason for the payment, in addition to using your real name, is that when you come in and you join and you make your $14.95 payment for your year of membership, we make sure, or actually I make sure, because as an administrator, I'm the only person that can see anybody's real name. Even the forum leaders can't see anybody's real name. But I make sure that the name on the payment matches the name that was registered with, so that somebody doesn't go and just pull a name out of the FAA database and register, using an alias. So that's kind of our full circle verification to make sure that the people that are on the site are really who they are. But one of the most unique things that happens at Pro Pilot World quite often that doesn't happen that I've seen anywhere else is that many times members will get together while they're on the road or in a town. We have a big networking section. And if somebody's going to go and they're going to be, say, they're going to be on a trip to Dallas and they're going to be there a couple days, they might post, hey, I'm going to be in Dallas from, you know, June 25th through 27th. Is anybody around? And sure enough, there'll be multiple replies and people will, they'll end up scheduling something and you'll have members meeting in person. So not only are they increasing their virtual network, but their real network all of a sudden becomes very much a part of this as well. A recent example is back in April, I went to Dallas for recurrent training for the Gulfstream for a week. And I put a post in there that I was going to be out there for a week. And one night we ended up getting well over a dozen Pro Pilot World members, mostly locals, but there were a couple other people that were out there for school. And we all went out to Hard 8 Barbecue and had a great dinner. And geez, I think we were there for 3.5-4 hours all talking, exchanging stories. And I got to meet over a dozen new Pro Pilot World members that I hadn't met previously. So it's really exciting. In the time that we've had the site going, I've probably met 300 to 400 members personally throughout my travels and at various gatherings that we've had. When I lived back in Chicago, we were having probably twice a year networking events for the Chicago area, and we would usually have 40 or 50 members show up, sometimes more. And since I've been in Southern California, we've done a couple of those too. Usually they're up in the L.A. Orange County area. And it brings up people from San Diego and people from as far up as the Bay Area have even come down to attend the events. And then anybody that happens to be in town during the event too, if they're out on a trip, they've come too. So it's been very exciting. I don't know of any other sites that that people are actually willing to go out and meet the other folks that are on the other end of the conversation. So it just shows that the trust in the accountability that's there, that people are willing to go out and meet each other and, you know, expand their real world network in addition to their virtual network.
I like the name Pro Pilot World. I got to tell you, it kind of evokes the image of, you know, a massive industry trade show of some kind. So that kind of leads me to wonder what kinds of things have you thought about as future features or, you know, offshoots of this? Will we see Pro Pilot World magazine or what? Where do you think this might lead?
I don't know. We've grown quite a bit. It's still growing. Fortunately, we're very happy about that. We'd like to see even more pilots get involved with it because, you know, the bigger that our membership base is, the bigger the knowledge base is. And you know, one thing that's really happened with the number of members we've got, you've always heard about the, you know, 6 degrees of separation, and that you would meet somebody. Well, Pro Pilot World in the aviation world has brought that 6 degrees of separation down to about 2. And I've seen where people have come on and said, hey, you know, I'm wondering about this company. And all of a sudden, sure enough, within an hour or two, somebody posts, well, you know, I don't know about that company, but my buddy used to work there and let me get you his number and I'll get you guys in touch. And so that connection is very real. I'm working on some ideas how maybe we can take that to the next level. But really, right now, it's just we're working with that online forum, and the people are coming and willing to help each other out. So a magazine in the future, I don't know. I haven't put thought into that. That might be an option. But right now, the online world is working really well for us, and it's giving us that dynamic environment where a lot of the ideas for forums and stuff have come from other members. And if there's enough interest, then we happily add it. So we've grown with the help of the membership and with their ideas and their input. And that kind of comes back again to not having advertisers. We're really more interested in the thoughts of our members and where they want to see the site go. And then we try and help it go in that direction versus worrying about just keeping ad revenue at a certain level. So we'll see what the future holds. Don't really know right now what it'll look like in 5 years or 10 years or what the offshoots will be. But the way it's been growing, I think we'll definitely see some further developments.
Well, now, your members are all Americans then? It's all pretty much continental U.S., or I should say 50 states of the U.S. as members?
175 countries we have members from.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And so you don't see any upcoming need to have a sort of a riffraff section for the less technically experienced pilots or wannabes that are out there, huh?
Because we'd like to moderate that section ourselves if we could.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking of that. We can handle that.
In fact, I was wondering, Mark, you could help us a lot. Could we ask you to vet Rob? Because we're just not so sure.
Well, Rob is an upstanding member of our community. So
That's right. I paid my $14.95, and I know my rights.
And then they give you a
whatever
pilot's
they
license.
Are.
Is that it?
So, but it, yeah, and I can speak to not having been a member very long, of course, but I can say that I was just really amazed at the depth and the width of experiences that I see from people that are part of the forum, and I think it's pretty cool. So I was pretty impressed. But well, Mark, let me ask you, anything else you might want to tell us about the ProPilotWorld.com site that we haven't already talked about?
Well, I think that, you know, any professional pilot, one of the big misconceptions I think that I see about our site is members will come on, they'll join, they'll look for a new job, they'll find the new job, and then they might not rejoin for the next year. And so many times if I see somebody, they come back and say, okay, you know, my membership expired. And I say, well, if you don't mind, give us a little bit of feedback. And they're like, well, I came on, it was a great site. I found the new job, but, you know, I'm happy in my job. And the initial misconception of the site a lot of times is that it's a job site, and we're really not a job site. We have thousands of job listings, but at the end of the day, we're really about exchanging information and networking. So I think that people come in, and if they're in a tight position in their career and they need that next job, they come in and they find it, and then they move on, but they might not take the time to look at what else the forums have to offer and to spend the time to engage themselves in the community. It's really one of those situations where, you know, the more you give to the community, the more the community is going to give back to you. So we have members that are extremely active. They're on the site every day. They're posting a lot. And then we have members who are, you know, lurkers, and they come and read. Turns out that the people that are active on the site, when they need help or something, the membership really steps up. So I think that probably our biggest misconception is people view us as just another job site. And really, at the end of the day, we're not a job site. We've got a tremendous amount of jobs, and you could probably find almost any of the publicly posted pilot jobs that are available. They'll be on our site within, you know, 12 hours of them being publicly posted, but it's other members bringing that information to the site. So we have members that, you know, they enjoy posting jobs for others to see and hopefully helping out somebody. So that's what we want people to know, is that when you come, even if you're coming looking for a job, that's great. We can certainly help because of all the listings we have. But once you have that new job, keep in mind that, you know, as pilots, we always need to continue growing our knowledge and to continue learning, and it never hurts to continue networking. And those are the areas that ProPilot World really shines, because we can bring all that information to you at the touch of a finger. You have access to over 14,000 pilots, and, you know, currently our combined membership flight time on the website is over 96 million hours. So anytime you can tap into 90 million hours of flight experience to ask questions, you're probably going to get a pretty reliable answer back, and you're going to get more than one answer, and you'll get opinions from different people in different segments of the industry. So you can really get a well-rounded bit of information as opposed to a single point answer.
Wow, 96 million flight hours. Max, how many logbooks would that be?
Well, I think Brian could probably tell us. Wouldn't that make you premier if you had that many hours in the airplane?
Oh, at least global services.
Good Lord. Well, so
the
Mark,
black card.
Mark, tell our listeners where they can find more information about your site.
Well, if you go to www.propilotworld.com, you'll find our main homepage. And on there is a pretty good description about what we are, what we're about, and how to become a member. And then you can go to the next page, which will take you to the forums. There's a link right on our main page. It'll take you there. And you can look at the forums, take a look, and then there's also links to join. And we'd love to have more professional pilots on there from all over the world. We're very heavy in the United States, obviously, but we've also got a very strong presence in Europe, as well as Asia, down to Australia, and even to the Middle East and Africa. So we're really it's truly covering the world. I've been on trips in Asia, in Europe, and South America, and met up with other ProPilot World members, and it's been great. You're on the road, and you run into somebody, and you got that common bond. So all of a sudden, there's a bit of an instant friendship there, and you never know where those connections go. You know, the networking's important in all industries, and especially in aviation. So ProPilotWorld.com is definitely somewhere that you can expand your network and definitely expand your knowledge base.
Wow. Well, Mark Matsuka, thank you so much for joining us on the Airplane Geeks podcast this week. I hope we can have you back again one of these days.
Great, Rob. Well, it's been a pleasure being here and speaking with you and Brian and Max, and we'd love to have you keep active on our site and come in and give some of your input with your years of experience flying. And Max, we'd love to see you join us as well.
Great. Thanks for the invitation. I'm dying to get the lapel pen and find out the secret handshake.
Yeah, well, we'll get you a lanyard. We've got ProPilot World lanyards. I run into those quite a bit on the road. You see people wearing them.
Excellent.
I have to keep that in mind.
Hey, Mark, just wondering, how much fun is it flying the Gulfstream?
It's a lot of fun. I spent many years flying the Falcons as well. I flew Falcon 50 EXs and 900 EXs, and those are fantastic airplanes as well. The Falcons really fly like a bit of a fighter or a sports car. The Gulfstream's a little bit bigger, a little more comfortable. It's kind of, I tell people that flying the Falcon was like driving your Corvette, and flying the Gulfstream's kind of like driving your dad's Cadillac. A little bigger, a little smoother, but the Gulfstreams are great. Avionics, it's all leading edge avionics stuff with the heads-up display and the synthetic vision. And they're just great, reliable airplanes, and we get fantastic support from Gulfstream when we do need it. And I've taken them all over the world, and they've been very good to me. So I'm really enjoy it, and like I tell people, I haven't worked a day in the last 25 years.
Wow. Well, I don't know that that's a statement that I could make. Max, what do you think?
Well, I know where he's coming from.
That's true.
If you're doing what you love, it doesn't feel
like
work.
All we've got to do is get Brian now.
We just don't want our clients to know that, because then they might stop paying us, and that might be a problem.
Exactly.
That's a good point. So, hey, listen, thank you so much. It's been a hoot, and if you do get into Palwaukee again or find yourself out this week, give me a yell. I'd love to chat with you, even if we don't have a restaurant right on the airport anymore.
I know. I miss the old hangar restaurant.
We all used to say we hated it, but now that it's been gone for God knows how many years, we all miss it. So
I know. It was the greasiest of greasy spoons, but like you said, when you look back, there's a soft spot there for it.
Yeah, it's a place to hang out. So, but anyway.
What's that? After years, it makes the food taste better?
You know, that's an interesting point. I don't know about that. Maybe when it comes to food, maybe we should not go down that road, because I don't know anything about food. I just eat what's ever in front of me.
There you go.
And before we go, of course, I want to make sure that we thank everybody who donated to the Airplane Geek Show in order to help get all of us, not me obviously, but everybody else out to Virginia for the Air and Space Museum event. Unfortunately, we can't list you all by name in the show because we actually don't have the list in front of us here. But we just wanted you all to know that we're really, really grateful to those of you that contributed, and we really do appreciate your support. So this has been episode 356 of the Airplane Geeks Podcast. And I would like to thank my co-hosts, Max Truscott, out in the Bay Area. Where can people find out more about you than they ever wanted to know?
Well, that would be true. You could look at, maxtruscott.com or g1000book.com or jetwine.com. Oh, wait, no, that would be you.
That's true, jetwine.com and various and sundry places, and me on Facebook and who knows where, but Of course, that leaves us with our producer, Brian. Brian, where do people find you?
I like that so much. Max's flight is away this week, and I just got promoted to full-fledged producer instead of associate producer. So thank you very much for the promotion. People can get a hold of me at brian@airplanegeeks.com. And also, just as a reminder, if anyone wants the back catalog of the shows, send me an email and we'll work out details on how to get you the back episodes so you could listen to all 355 of them.
Oh my God. That sounds incredible.
7 years.
I'll save that for the day when I retire. So, but thanks very much, guys. And so we'll see everybody next week when we'll be recording another episode of the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Good night, everybody.
Fly safely.
Keep the blue side up.
Yay. We be done. Cool, guys. Thanks so much.
Shorty, this is great.
Wait, would that be didgeridoo well done?
Scooby dooby doo?
If you're a little kid, would it be a didgeridoo doo? Okay. All right. See, Brian, this is why they don't want me on this show.
Quick, stop
this
the
This is
recording.
Why they're trying to get rid of me.
Apparently.
I try to be a little bit creative, and people get all crazy on us.